to delete the word seabed on line 1.6 and to delete everything after the period on page on 1.14 through the end of the page, and to add the language, the commission shall not approve a contract that is not in compliance with this section.
Representative Falk, I think since that is a motion before us, we do need to vote on it. But everyone understands the amendment to the amendment. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Prettner-Solin? I think we have the amendment actually was before us before recess. So it's Representative Falk's motion that the A52 amendment, as amended, be adopted. Any discussion to the motion? Anyone wish to testify on the amendment? Seeing no one, all those in favor of the adoption of the A52 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
So, Mr. Chair, I move to adopt section 9 in the House language, lines 6.15 through 6.29 as amended. Oh, wait, through 6.30 as amended.
That motion is before us. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is, or the language is adopted as amended. Representative Beard.
Two brief House positions regarding seabed compliance for local residency and so on. Are we going to yield on those or take those?
We have not. Representative Beard is referring, I believe, to
page 8, 6.1.
R8, section 7, and page R9, section 8. I believe the discussion we had earlier was that of the two amendments, the Section 7 amendment actually would include the provision in the Section 8 amendment. We have not. Had any indication from the Senate of willingness to adopt those amendments, Representative Beard, and since we have basically eliminated any language related to seabed in the bill, I think it's kind of understandable.
Understood. Thank you.
Palmer, where are we?
that bring us to section 810 on R9.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that's the requirement to buy 200 megawatts of small projects in 5-megawatt increments or less. And additionally, those projects must qualify, as stated on line 7.6 through 7.8, for some renewable energy incentive under either the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, Federal Energy for America program, or other renewable energy incentive program. These projects are small in nature. I think we had a thorough discussion with in addressing Senator Dahl's questions about how we've done the work to identify where these sweet spots are, how we can plug these projects in, how we can do them strategically to avoid the MISO process. I think this is a good way to bring some jobs, some stimulus dollars into our state to really facilitate renewable energy development. I would say that I think that this is a we're not asking our utilities friends to do a whole lot out of the 16,000 megawatts of generation in the state. Merely asking them to do 200 is not a monumental task. Granted, the time frame is fairly condensed because in order to qualify for that ITC, the 30%, the projects have to be done in operation by December 31st, 2010. As kind of a compromise, I think that it wouldn't be too much to ask that if we were to change the requirement from 200 megawatts to 100 megawatts, I think people could live with that. And we are doing steps. We're implementing the policies from the Next Generation Energy Act of 2007. We're understanding where these projects can be built intelligently, where we can move quickly, where we can go and capture additional dollars, and where we can put people to work. I think there's numerous wins here. In addition, there is no fixed price or requirement on how a price is derived. The utilities will RFP these like they would another project. And to further alleviate any concerns, we want this to be in tandem to what is also going on. And in line 710 through 714, it states that this requirement does not prevent an electric utility from developing or acquiring electrical energy from other sources, either within or outside the state, regardless of whether such sources use renewable energy. And then no person may participate financially in more than one project that counts toward the 200-megawatt requirement established in this section. So we're trying to get as many people involved, many entities involved, having the ability to invest in rural communities where these projects will be located. And so I think this is good language. It's good policy. It's good for the state. And with that, the compromise, I would offer the amendment to strike 200 on 7.4 and put in 100. And on 7.13, strike 200 and put 100 in.
Any discussion to the Bob motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
Nay.
The motion fails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess if we have additional questions, I'd like to encourage people to vote for the section.
Representative Paul, is that a motion?
If you would like, Mr. Chair, I would move that we adopt line 7. The on what's that? Section 10, lines 6.31 through 7.14, as amended.
Discussion to the motion. Senator Brenner-Sullivan.
I would advocate against the motion. We have a strong position in the Senate against the bill. We gave thorough hearing to the bill. We've expressed time and again the fact that the seabed language doesn't work and that it needs to be redrafted and rewritten. And we're very, very concerned about slowing down meeting the RES. And I think the more we put restrictions on moving forward on meeting that renewable energy standard, the more encumbrance that causes. And our goal is to get more renewable energy out there and to reduce our carbon emissions.
Further discussion to the motion?
Well, I would offer that this section doesn't pertain exclusively to seabed. In fact, seabed is not referenced. And the areas where people had contention, which were some of the pricing mechanisms, have been removed. And if people or some of our utilities would like to speak, I think we've alleviated most of their concerns, if not all of their concerns. And I know that there's people in the audience here who could speak ad nauseum about how this is a way to actually facilitate more renewable energy development because we have done the work. And if nothing else, it speeds up our ability as a state to get projects online. One of the biggest hurdles is going through the interconnection process attributed to MISO. And that's typically a multi-year process where we have identified where we can put projects on at distribution levels, going through a much faster process because we're not impacting or touching the transmission grid. We can get these projects built in a timely manner. Furthermore, we have huge financial incentives from the federal government as part of the recovery, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, that we should work to take advantage of. And this policy drives that. This puts in place a vehicle to get these projects done. And I think that we have had thorough hearings specifically in the House, and we've addressed the major points that people had contention with. This is compromise language, and I truly believe that this is an opportunity which would benefit our state greatly, and it would be a mistake to not move forward.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against the motion regarding this provision? Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair, members of the Conference Committee, again, my name is Joe Sullivan. I'm representing Missouri River Energy Services. I would like to note that, you know, 100 megawatts in the grand scheme of things is not, it's not a large requirement, but we still do have two concerns with the language. The first concern is that, and I understand why the proponents of seabed did this, is because it avoids, there were some serious interstate commerce clause issues. But the language as it's currently written does, I understand, too, that what you want to do is you want to create an incentive here so that we can get funds from the stimulus package that was passed from the, by the federal government. But the language does not have a requirement for geography. So, you know, you could technically qualify by doing a project in Iowa under this language or South Dakota or North Dakota. So that is the first issue that I see with the language. And then the second issue is also I question the need to incent an incentive. And, you know, the federal government has put forward money in the incentive or in the stimulus plan to incentivize these smaller projects. I don't think that the state needs to incent people going out and getting that incentive. So those are my two concerns that I have with the language.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Are there any questions for Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. How many megawatts would Missouri River have to do under this provision?
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin. I mean, Representative. You're at my left.
Keep him out of it.
I was thinking about the stimulus bill. And
let's don't do that right now.
Sorry. Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, Missouri River would have to do 1 megawatt, which is, I don't know, depending on the size of the project, it would be 1 turbine probably. But I do want to preface that by saying that I recognize that 100 megawatts in the grand scheme of things is not an enormous carve-out or mandate. But I don't think that changes the thrust of the concerns that I have.
Seeing no further questions for Mr. Sullivan, thank you. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? Mr. Crocker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is George Crocker. I'm the Executive Director of the North American Water Office. To Mr. Sullivan's first point, there is no requirement that this be done in Minnesota, and he had that right because of interstate commerce. So we're sort of in a catch-22 here. But we did a mandate before. It was in 1994. It turned out to be for 825 megawatts, and they're all in Minnesota. So as a practical matter, this development, if it happens, if you are able to provide us the leadership we need to take advantage of the opportunity that Representative Falk has outlined for us, it will be in Minnesota. To the second point, the incentive. Well, everybody out there, all of your constituents, know that there's federal stimulus money out there. How many of them know that they can get some? There's an incentive out there. There's a huge opportunity to do something good for our economy, for jobs, for local economic development. But it's happening behind the curtain. It's happening behind the curtain. They don't know. A mandate for 100 megawatts, for 50 megawatts, for 25 megawatts, a mandate, a requirement that we look behind the curtain will allow us to go and do the organizing in such a way that we can take advantage. We can focus the attention of the local leaders. Look, we have to do something, we can say, as opposed to a legislature that refused to provide this kind of leadership. Look, we have this opportunity before us now because we can turn this dirt between now and the end of next year to take advantage of this money. Without our ability to organize these projects and bring them to the utilities, it won't happen. Maybe we'll get a little, but it won't be able to take advantage of the opportunity that's on the table. Let's see some leadership. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, let me say one more thing, and that has to do with the idea that this is not a new step. This is a step in a continuum that has been going on for many years now in Minnesota. And Minnesota has provided some really good leadership for it, beginning with the mandates in 94 and continuing on through the Community Wind North and Community Wind South that happened in southwest Minnesota to allow 60 megawatts of locally owned projects to come forward if we could do it, and we're doing it. And that led to the seabed legislation, which really does help us to understand this concept of economic democracy a little bit and how to spread it out. Because it's the widgets that are rolling off the factories now that provide the economies of scale, which is different than Central Station. The conventional demarcations between base load and intermediate load and peaking load dissolve as the widgets that roll off the factory assembly lines learn to follow the load duration curves. And we saw that incredible transition happening from the mouth of the FERC chairman, John Wellinghoff, recently said how this country may never need another coal or nuclear power plant again, ever, because the widgets are learning how to follow that duration curve. And the reason that he can say that is because of the work that's been done here with the sweet spot study that Representative Falk referenced just a bit ago. That's what's teaching the industry how to do things different, how to get out of the central station old paradigm and into the modern era. This requirement to do 100 megawatts or 50 megawatts or 25 megawatts is the next logical step to do that. And I repeat myself, let's see some leadership. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crocker. Are there any questions for this witness, Representative Falk?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Crocker, to address the issue of whether or not these would be built in Minnesota, we have done most of the work to identify spots where we can interject power strategically through the sweet spot study. You had some working experience with respect to that. Would you have any comments to offer with how we've identified places and how we can move those forward?
Chairman, members, actually it's even better than that. The sweet spot study looked at increments of 10 to 40 megawatts, and we were able to locate in Minnesota locations for 10 to 40 megawatts with no new transmission infrastructure requirements. Now, there were impacts on the higher voltage system, and it was hard to find those locations, but the point is they did it. And what they learned was a little bit about the methodology that it takes in order to strategically size and locate generation using the existing system. And then the next increment is to strategically size and locate the enhancements to the transmission system for the next increments of generation. It's a series of iterations that we're learning to do rather than the central station, big power plant, big power line to the load. When we're talking about projects that are 5 megawatts and less, where the sweet spots, the number of sweet spots magnifies manyfold. So there are literally almost however many substations are in greater Minnesota, which is something like 2,227. It's not quite right, but it's close.
Maybe 26.
Maybe. But each one of those substations becomes an on-ramp for a project that is properly sized. And when you're down into the 5 megawatt and less size range, most of those substations could accommodate. So the opportunity to spread these units of generation out and allow the people in these communities to benefit from that economic development is huge. It's with us now. It requires a little leadership to lift the curtain. That's all it takes.
Further questions for Mr. Crocker? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Further discussion to the motion? Or further testimony? Mr. Swanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Eric Swanson from Winthrop and Weinstein. We represent a group called the Minnesota Wind Coalition. It's a group of 6 developers. One headquartered here in Minneapolis, and all 6 now with offices in Minnesota. Project Resources, Navitas, Horizon, Res Americas, Iberdrola, and Anexco. And the coalition had serious concerns with this section of the bill, obviously reducing mandate from 200 megawatts to 100 megawatts is a move in the right direction and alleviates those concerns to some extent, but I thought I should still share our concerns with the committee. Specifically, the concern is that with this requirement and the date of December 31st, 2010 to meet the requirement, it is necessarily going to take attention from the utilities to meet this mandate. If you put a mandate on the books, we presume the utilities are going to try to meet the mandate. Even at 100 megawatts, it's 20 projects that need to be found, put under contract, constructed, or under construction by the end of next year. 20 contracts with, as I read the language, 20 different financial partners. It's not going to be an easy thing to pull off. My clients just want to keep working to help us achieve the renewable energy standard and to see the vision through that you adopted in 2007. I had the privilege last week of being down at the OEA conference in Chicago, a truly amazing spectacle to see 22,000 people interested in the wind energy, and a lot of that interest was generated by the leadership that, this body showed back in 2007 in adopting the RES. We just want to keep working. One of the key themes in that conference was the need for regulatory certainty. Every time there are mandates within mandates, it does take attention away from achieving the ultimate goal. It does take resources away. Our clients right now are making decisions on what projects they're going to pursue in 2010. We want those to be projects in Minnesota bringing the kinds of dollars that I know Representative Falk is interested in bringing into the state as well. We think that will happen quicker and in a more robust way if we don't start looking at mandates within the mandates, and we would still encourage you to while I understand the intent and the motivation here, we would still encourage that this requirement not be added.
Any questions for Mr. Swanson or Senator Dahl?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Swanson, of the projects that you're looking at doing, the Minnesota projects?
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, yes.
Okay.
Most of these, I think every one of these developers is currently looking at Minnesota projects.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And just as a follow-up, Mr. Swanson, I know we talked about it earlier, but any of these projects, are they going to potential coming online in 2010, or would they, for all practical purposes, be after 2010?
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, no, the goal would be to have them online in 2010. As I say, the decisions right now that the developers are making is where are we going to pursue our projects? What projects are going to get from the drawing board to the field in 2010? And those decisions are being made right now.
Further questions for Mr. Swanson, Representative Falk?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Swanson, with the strategy reference, how far along are they in the MISO queue?
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, there are between the six members of the coalition, there are multiple projects that I'm sure are at multiple stages in multiple places in the queue. But there are projects that we believe can be online by the end of 2010. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Representative Falk, Mr. Pomeroy has just pointed out to me that there is no effective date in this section.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Elinford, do you have any thoughts?
Given the timeline on this project, Mr. Chair, it's probably a good idea to put one in. I would suggest after line 714, insert a headnote saying effective date and language saying that this section is effective the day following final enactment.
I would incorporate that, Mr. Chair.
I'm not sure, Representative Falk, that.
Do I need to move that language? Would that be the correct procedure?
Procedurally.
I think the motion's before us.
The amendment that you moved has already been adopted. There's not an amendment before us. It's in motion,
right.
to adopt the language. So I think that it would require an amendment. I'm not sure whether.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would move the amendment as articulated by Mr. Eloff.
That motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? That amendment is adopted. Back to the motion. Is there any further discussion? Any further testimony from anyone? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Faulkner is his motion that House language beginning with section 10 on page R9 as amended be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Nay.
No. I think we'll have to have a division on this. If all those in favor would please raise their hands. And those opposed. Motion does not prevail. Mr. Pomeroy.
Chair and members, I believe the next section that has not been acted upon is on page R15, that's section 60.
Appear, members, that we do not have support from the Senate for the adoption of this section.
Mr. Chair, the next section is on the Senate side on R16, section 12.
Senator Solon, we were.
I move section 12 in the Senate language, lines 11.9 through 11.29.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Eloff had a technical comment and I have a question.
Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Chair, I simply point out that this section also lacks an effective date.
This is your provision that we're discussing. If you
whatever works.
Senator Dibble, does this need to be effective prior to August 1st? 2009?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I don't think so.
Senator Beard.
Okay, now to my questions, and I assume we've resolved that, if it just passes with no date at state, August 1st is the date. Okay. We had some discussion, I don't remember, it's running together, earlier today or yesterday, OES had talked about the same technology, same vintage and things like that on the solar standard here. There was a little concern about being clear that we were comparing new solar to new solar or something to that effect. Do you recall that discussion?
I believe Director Glahn is going to
remind us of it. That would be good. Thank you.
Chairman Hilty, Representative Bureau, I do recall that discussion, and given the late hour and given my colloquy with Mr. Fuller that it didn't seem to be adding anything to the effort, I withdraw my objection.
Thank you, Representative Bureau.
That was nice and succinct. I like
that. Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair and colleagues, this was a provision that was originally proposed in my bill, the companion to Senator Dibble's, and because of some questions that I had asked that it not be brought forward in the, did not advocate for being included in our companion in the House, and having had those questions answered, I do believe that it's worth proceeding with this piece, although I do want to make sure that the chief advocate, XLMG, knows that we'll be asking them for some rigorous results and to make sure that we're actually doing what they hope to be achieving with this section, which I think is directly linked to their solar rebate or solar rewards programs.
Take that as a yes, Representative.
It is a yes with a proceeding with caution, but urging members to proceed along with me cautiously.
Senator Fredner Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we need to add an effective date. My motion stands.
Motion before us is to adopt Section 12 and page R16, Senate language. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. The language is adopted. Mr. Pomeroy.
Chair, the next section is on that same page, Section 17 on the House.
This, members, is a section that was part of the governor's green jobs or green something. Not remembering the title.
Green Jobs Initiative.
Yes, thank you, Representative Kalin. It was basically a tax bill that had this provision. When we heard the bill in the House, we adopted this provision before the bill was sent to taxes. Without it, it was part of the governor's original bill. And Senator Solon, I don't know if the Senate has come to any conclusion about this provision at this point.
Mr. Chair, this piece was stripped out of our out of the bill in the Senate Policy Committee, and it did not advance.
concern is, we're already hearing from the, we're hearing from the natural gas utilities about the difficulty of achieving their goals as it is. We approve the provision that allows the slow ramp up over the first 4 years and, 9 years, slow ramp up, and then it feels like diverting further SIP resources for the purchase of biomethane, natural gas utilities, and counting that towards SIP, which and it's not actually energy savings. It feels like putting them even further away from achieving their SIP, using their SIP resources and putting them further away from achieving those energy savings goals. That's what it feels like if I'm reading that differently or misinterpreting or something that has a different perspective on this.
Representative Beard?
The gas utilities in particular, I think, would probably be deeply appreciative of this because they're having trouble achieving the 1.5% because their sales are already in decline. Except for major industrial use and electrical generation, the sales per individual household has been shrinking since 1971, making it very difficult to continue to have them shrink at the rate we're demanding here. At some point, they're just going to go beep and go away at some point in the future here. I'm sure we could chart that. However, allowing them to use something along this line, I think, does two things. First of all, it gives them a reasonable chance of actually making the mandate that we're afflicting them with. Secondly, it creates a market, and I can't believe I'm actually saying this, but if we allow this to happen, it actually incentivizes somebody to actually perfect the biomethane, whether it's a digester on some of these farms that have several hundred cows or wherever it comes from. Allowing them to work that into the system on the utility-grade natural gas, I think, could be beneficial down the road and would not be a useless adventure. Could be actually very useful. So though it may feel like we're taking them away, we put them in an impossible box anyhow because of their declining unit sales. And I think it's one reason we heard testimony earlier today when we did the decoupling program, pilot program. The only utilities that signed up for it were the utilities that were in a really hard spot, which would be the natural gas utilities, because their sales are declining already. So, Mr. Chairman and Madam Chairman, I think that although the Senate may not have taken a position on this one, I think there is good underlying fundamental reasons why we may want to include this in the bill and allow it to move ahead. Mr. Chairman, if you're looking for a motion, I'm happy to make the motion that we include on our page R16, section 17, which I believe runs through R17 down to line 13.10. Effective dates. Yeah, we've just been talking about those, haven't we? We'll incorporate an effective date. 13.10 from line 12.26.
Senator Brenner-Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, I'd just remind the committee that we did, and I can't find it now, of course, recently adopt language. On R31, I guess. No, that's, yeah, on R32, actually. That allows them to achieve the gas companies and to achieve their annual savings of at least 1% over the fourth through the ninth year. So we've given them already some cushion or some assistance in reaching that goal.
Director Blonde, did you wish to weigh in on this one?
Mr. Chair, I do.
Mr. Glad.
Chairman Hilty, members, this was a part of the Governor's Green Jobs Investment Initiative. My recollection is a little different than Senator Prettner-Solin's recollection of the events in her committee. It may well have been stripped out at some point. I thought we had sent this on to the next committee, but that was my recollection. But be that as it may, it was the governor's investment initiative to, I think it was Senator Dibble? Senator Dibble's point about, you are correct, Senator Prentner-Solon, that we did, the committee did adopt that language, helping the utilities meet that 1%. I would point out that this provision actually would not allow them to count the biomethane incentive towards that first 1%. They could only count it in meeting that next half a percent. I'll refer you to lines 13.1, third to 13.3, actually through the remainder of the page. So they would not be, it would not interfere, at least the way I read it, with interfere with the efforts of the gas companies getting to that minimum 1%, which I think was Senator Dibble's concern, but would give them an incentive to count it beyond, once they hit that minimum, to help them beyond getting toward that 1.5% goal. And also, I would point out, at least it was our intent in drafting it to be qualitatively similar to the provision that the committee just adopted unanimously in Section 12 on the Senate language on that same page. So it was the same sort of concept, that to give utilities and incentives in the Conservation Improvement Program to make investments in renewable energy technologies that we believe are beneficial to the state. So with that, those are my thoughts on the matter. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Guan. Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, so if I understand this correctly, the way this was written, that the utilities would not be able to do this or qualify the biomethane purchases until they've reached their 1% goal first. And we're now pushing that off for 4 to 9 years out before they even going to get to that. So this, in effect, would take effect until after that point. Is that correct? How does it work?
Director Kwan, do you want to come back and tell us if that's your understanding?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, I think you're reading that correctly, in that that is a drawback of the way we drafted the language, that it, in effect, if utilities and a gas utility aren't getting to that 1%, this provision doesn't really help them in the near term. But, you know, we would hope that as they get to the 1%, it gives them a carrot at the end of that period, that if they can get to the 1%, then they get some help with the next half a percent. And, you know, I'd have to give some thought. I was standing hovering behind you, giving some thought how I would interact with that carry-forward language we passed earlier. So, you know, there might be some earlier term benefit if they were able to avail themselves of that provision. But I'd have to check on that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dahl.
So, again, the way we've got it written, again, if it's in that upper half percent, they cannot spend money on it or provide any kind of credit until they've gotten their first 1%. So I just don't see how this is going to, I mean, I like the carrot effect that they would be out there. I mean, I guess I would support this measure if, under those conditions. It seems like it's a carrot out there and they can reach. And maybe it will incentivize them to move a little faster. I don't know, achieve those goals at 1%. But again, we're in the same line, understanding that it's 1% first, then the half percent. They can't use that dollars for anything before that, before they've reached their 1%.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, that's my understanding in reading the statute as it's written.
I'm sorry,
the proposal as it's written.
Representative Callen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Vaughn, hold on for a second. I just want to be sure that I understand that. I mean, I'm inclined, you know, Senator Dibble and I are partners in conservation and vigorous defenders of SIP, but
crime.
and your editorial comments from the audience there. But you know, I've been inclined to say that because of what Senator Dahl raised about the 1% piece, and knowing that the gas utilities are, it may give an opportunity for them to stretch to get to that 1% goal. I've not been a fan of the center point piece that they brought forward. They know my feelings. I've been very skeptical about it, but I understand it's a necessary step given the pragmatics of where we are. This may actually be enough of an incentive to get there. I guess I was going to ask Director Glahn about that, just to confirm that the incentive, performance incentive that utilities get for achieving their SIP goal would in essence only kick in once they could access then this biomethane additional on top of that, on top of that 1%. Generally, I know that there's a little bit of tweak that I may be missing, but in just sort of broader general pieces with natural gas, that this couldn't be used to really sort of leapfrog over that 75%, 0.75 or something else, to be able to get more money to be able to really pretend to be doing more than they actually are. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, it's been some time since I was really conversant with the details of these plans, but my recollection was that there was some level below which utilities received no financial incentive. And then as they approached a minimum goal, they started receiving a very modest and a modest amount of money in thousands of dollars, is my recollection. And then as they got above their goal, the incentive became – so it was a sliding scale – and that the closer they got to the goal and beyond the goal, they got bigger and bigger incentives. So it was to reward performance and reward performance as they moved up that ladder. So I don't think this would interfere with that process.
Senator Brenner-Sloan.
Mr. Glahn, will these be counted toward their spending goal?
Director Glahn.
Mr. Chair, Senator Prettner-Solon, my reading of 12.29, I would say that they could count up to 5% or spend up to 5%. I heard the discussion we had earlier, does it add up to 45%? I don't think that was the intent. You know, it's, again, subject to check. My recollection is that not all utilities are even using that 5%. So we were trying to give them some other alternatives out there to use that 5%. And, you know, we had two or three different things in here that we were trying to give them some flexibility on. But it's also my clear understanding that with the 1.5% goal, at least the way it is today, that the spending goals are not a binding constraint, that folks are having to spend well beyond their spending mandates in order to get to that 1.5%. So having people get to their spending, by and large, is not the problem at present. But
Senator Dibble. Excuse me.
I've been persuaded. And if, you know, I mean, we'll have a conversation later with the gas utilities, but if they're so excited about the opportunity to purchase biomethane, that they're going to zoom up and get to their 1% and then get past it up to 1.5, well, then we're all better off. So got biomethane being purchased, hopefully being generated down at Senator Senjum's district. He was talking about that earlier.
We got a lot of that down there.
All right. Generates it.
Creeping.
So sounds like this provision won't do the kind of harm that I fear.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Dibble. Mr. Glahn, thank you. Well, we do have the motion before us. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Beard renews his motion that Section 17, beginning on page R16, House language be adopted. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying
aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion prevails. Mr. Pomeroy.
Mr. Chair, just one thing before going on to the next section. We may want to entertain a motion pursuant to the joint rules to meet past midnight. Was that last thing adopted?
Yeah.
Keep us informed when we get to 5:00, Mr.
I got my alarm set.
I've been watching the clock myself. But.
All right. Moving on then, the next unadopted section.
Incentivizing the
R19, section 19. And there is an amendment that's the A56 amendment. I believe the interest here is taking the Senate language on section 14.1 through 14.22, the amendment on 856 included in that, and then taking the House language on 16.8 to 16.12.
That motion is before us. Senator Dibble?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Pointed out to me, and Representative Kalin, that the word install on line 4 should maybe be replaced with the word participate in, which I think would capture the idea of installation, but not in a literal sense, because communities and
Senator, would you wish
Mr.
to incorporate
Chair,
that?
I would incorporate that in the amendment.
Senator Solon incorporates the substitution of participate in for install on line 1.4. That the A56 amendment then as amended is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Pretner Solon.
Chair, I move Senate Section 14, lines 14.1 through 14.22, and House Section 16.8 through 16.12, or point 12, as amended.
That motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The language is adopted. Mr. Pomeroy.
Mr. Chair, the next section is R23, the section dealing with nuclear power, which the House is not interested in adopting. So if you hear anything different, to save time, Section 24 on the House side, R25, is the Reliability Administrator section. I don't know if any agreement was reached there.
Senator Pretner Solon?
No, we were, Mr. Chair, we were asking for additional information on this. I'm not sure that there's sufficient time to provide that. It appears that there's growing need to have a reliability administrator on staff, and it seems that really what we need is to know how much needs to be paid for that reliability administrator, and I think that might be the appropriate amendment, but I'm not sure we're prepared to do that this year.
Senator, I think we're in agreement that we need at some point to find the language that works as it's intended, that will allow us to hire someone to perform this function. I guess the health position in this particular provision was that this may not be ideal, but it's better than what we've got. So I don't know if you would feel that is sufficient justification for changing the language and statute or not. But please stand ready to be advised by the Senate.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that the direction of the current language is what we're looking for. And I'm not sure what would be the appropriate amending language at this time.
Well, Senator, I would remind you that I believe we did have testimony from Mr. Harry that while there were other problems, that at least this was an improvement. But I don't think this is the life or death issue in any case. Well, apparently we do not have a motion in this provision. Mr. Palmer? Mr.
Chair, given that we're between sections with about 7 minutes left, I'll make the same reminder that I did earlier.
Mr. Chair, I move that we extend the what is the appropriate motion?
Motion would be to meet 1 hour past
midnight. 1 half hour past midnight.
That motion is before us. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Nonetheless, the motion prevails.
All right,
Mr. Palmer.
Mr. Chair, the next section is on the collection of sections. R28, sections 27 through 31 deal with the county wind permits. I believe Representative Falk has the A47 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A47 amendment.
We have it. I don't think I have it.
Make some more copies.
I agree. If you want to pass this down, you can never hand these things out early.
Was this distributed on the area?
Yeah.
Good morning. Representative Falk, you want to address
that? Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was brought to me by the Association of Minnesota Counties. They had some concerns with...
Representative Falk, would you please speak into the...
Oh, I apologize. Concerns with county permitting between 5 and 25 megawatts. They wanted an opt-out. The way this language in the side-by-side was drafted, they felt that that wasn't the case. So this language grants them that if the county does not elect to do permitting between 5 and 25 megawatts for wind energy projects, the Public Utilities Commission must issue the permits. I don't know if anybody from AMC here wishes to speak on behalf of this amendment. It was brought to me by them, and I am supportive of it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brettner Stoll.
I'd like to save time. The Senate doesn't intend to take any of this language.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Brettner Stoll, one of the issues that arises is that counties are able to permit, they can permit 5 megawatt or less projects. We have given them the ability to permit between 5 and 25 megawatt projects, but unfortunately that was put into law with a sunset of July 1st, 2009. Now this will have an adverse impact on a number of projects which are trying to go forward with county permitting, and I think it would not be in our best interest to delay or cause those projects extra consternation when they're going through the permitting process. They want to work at a local level. And so what this amendment had done is it simplified some of the definitions, because we have stated that counties can permit up to five megawatts or less, with the exception that they could permit up to 25 megawatts with a part changing the small wind energy conversion definition. So this clarifies that small wind energy conversion systems are less than 25 megawatts or less, and allows counties to permit if they so choose. It
it would help out a lot of these projects which are trying to go forward, and I don't think that we should force them to redo some of the work that they've been doing, specifically when they're trying to get turbines installed, they're trying to get projects built, and the sunset is giving them serious concerns.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brettner-Solin.
I'm not aware that this bill was even introduced in the Senate, but certainly it didn't come to our committee. We haven't had a hearing on any of the sections, 27 through 31.
Well, Senator Brettner-Solin.
Representative Thal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you commit to working on this with me next year to help resolve some of these issues with the idea that to help these people, specifically some constituents of mine, with projects that they're trying to get moving forward, that we could push the sunset back a year? Would that be acceptable to you, that with the commitment that we can work through this, we can have hearings on these bills next year? But I have a hard time telling people in my district that they're moving forward with projects that they're no longer going to be able to permit as the course that they've been trying to do, that would be really tough for them.
Senator Brettner-Solin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paul, it seems to me we put this language in only because it had a sunset. And without a hearing in the Senate, I can't imagine that we would extend this at this point.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Paul.
Thank you. I guess I wasn't here when this first went in, but there was a working group put together, which I don't think it really ever met, or the end product wasn't what people thought. Maybe somebody else can offer some comments, but this is an issue, and I really feel it would be poor to impact these projects, which are trying to do the right thing. They're trying to go through the local entity for permitting. I don't see how pushing back the sunset an additional year to allow them to continue on the path that they've already begun would cause undue harm.
Representative Falk, I'm not certain at this point. We have your motion for the amendment before.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. If I would withdraw the A47 amendment, there is the A46 amendment, which does just extend the sunset by 1 year, which I think we can work on these issues next year, but it would really help out people in my district, developers who have projects that are currently in process, which are facing the issue of not being able to continue with the permitting process which they're going upon, because as they interpret it, they have to be done by July 1, 2009. They don't feel that they will be able to meet that. Not entirely their fault. I mean, the MISO process has been a long and arduous process. This would be a way to keep these projects moving forward. I don't think it's too much to ask just to give them a little bit more time.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brettner-Solin.
The Senate has already adopted 5 or 6 proposals that the House has that have no position on the Senate. And it is very, very difficult to bring back a bill where there is no provision in the Senate. Not even any language to contrast with it. I may have a hard time selling this bill as it is. On the other hand, there isn't one provision that the House has accepted that was just a Senate position.
Well, Senator, I think we did, actually Mr. Pomeroy went through and kind of counted that up, and I think that there, in fact, are, although I don't think that's really particularly relevant to this discussion at hand.
Well, Mr. Chair, you at least had a bill that you were able to cite that matched up with our language. It may have passed separately, and you did not have it in your omnibus bill, but you did have a House position on it.
Well, Representative Falk, did you move the A46 amendment?
I would like to move the A46 amendment. I think with all of the issues we've had here, this is a very non-controversial one. We're simply giving projects which are moving forward the ability to continue on the path that they're on. By not adopting language, we're taking that option away from them. This is, and the counties have been able to permit projects up to 25 megawatts for a while, and it's always been the intention, because these are small projects. The counties know their area, they know the people, they know, I think, a good way of doing this versus having to go through the PUC. And it's an option for the counties. And for the counties, specifically some of those in my district who want to be able to do this work, they're asking for the ability. We can work on this, but don't put the brakes on when there's people and projects trying to move forward and they're doing the best job they can, and this would, I think, unfairly and unduly impact them through little, if not no fault of their own. And I would ask that members consider this and understand that this is, I think, hardly a contentious issue just to extend a sunset by a year to go and commit to work on this issue of how we set permitting standards. I think that it's a very simple and fair amendment. I would appreciate your support.
Well, seeing no further discussion, the amendment is before us. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Amendment clearly is not adopted.
Chair, moving on, page R30, section 22 on the Senate. Skipping over section 23 and 24 and 26, we adopted section 27, section 28. Is that being skipped over?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Prentice.
There clearly is a problem with the language in this bill, and there still is a desire to be able to work out something regarding people on LIHEAP and those that receive delivered fuel. So I've spoken with the author of this language, Senator Rosen, and she and I will hold stakeholder meetings this summer to try to meet with the CAP agencies and the vendors and the department and see what we can do to come up with some satisfactory language.
So thank you. Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, I would just come out to Senator Prentice-Solin that the session is still young. There's still time.
I hope not.
Ms. Pomeroy.
Mr. Chair, that brings us to the end of the side-by-side. There is one additional amendment that's been passed out, which is the A55 amendment.
Members, I think at this point you are familiar with the issue. What this amendment would accomplish is to redirect funds that have already been appropriated to the Commissioner of Commerce for a grant to the Biobusiness Alliance. I think members are familiar with the Biobusiness Alliance and what it does. They were asking for an appropriation of $2.2 million initially. That was reduced. It was originally carried in the Economic Development Bill. It was reduced there to $1 million appropriation we have been informed by the Alliance and by numerous proponents that that funding level is insufficient for them to continue with their activities. We were asked if we could find some means of funding them for the current or for the coming biennium in consultation with fiscal staff and the, and others. We did find that the fund mentioned in the amendment has a balance that has not been used and would cancel at the end of the fiscal year. And so what this amendment does is transfer a portion of that unused fund to for the purpose of the Biobusiness Alliance. And I would ask members' support for the 855 amendment. And the chair will move adoption of the 855 amendment. Any discussion? Senator Sundrum.
Chair, could I ask once again where this money is coming from? The fund that you referred to, the what did you refer to? I guess I, the source of the money is. Do we have an energy related fund that this is coming from?
It is, Senator. It's money that was appropriated. I believe it's the biofuels development account. Biofuels. Mr. Palmer, do you recall the exact title?
Mr. Chair, how it was referenced to me by department staff was the renewable research. It was originally a $4.25 million appropriation in 2007. Of which there's somewhere over 1.6 or 1. Almost 1.6 million left. It was, I believe it's a separate fund or account that the, in that appropriation that's been left unspent. It's largely used for biofuels research, of which the Biobusiness Alliance is somewhat related.
Senator, we did feel that it was directly related to the activity of the Alliance as well as the intention of the original appropriation. Any further discussion to the amendment? All those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Members, I believe that concludes the yes. If there are no further motions or amendments, I believe that concludes the business of the committee. I think we need a motion. Mr. Pomeroy, could you elaborate, or Mr. Eloff and any concluding?
Mr. Chair, I think the staff would appreciate it if you would allow the staff to make any technical corrections that are necessary as we hand this over to the revisor.
We would certainly hope that that would happen. Mr. Eloff, I guess the question is that we need a motion to that effect, or how is that typically handled? Because I cannot remember.
I think it would. It couldn't be a bad idea, Mr. Chair. As we adopt the report as a whole and direct the staff to make technical corrections.
When the time is right, we can make the motion to adopt with the direction of the staff to make the technical corrections to make us all look better than we deserve.
I'm sorry, Senator Kretner-Sol.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I move that we adopt the Conference Committee report. I I guess that's it. Is that right? And
yes.
What? Mr. Chair, I move that. I move to prepare a conference committee report, and I request that and allow the permission for the staff to make any technical corrections that are necessary.
That, members, is the motion before us. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Kaelin.
Mr. Chair and Senator Petner-Solin, I just want to actually just recognize the two of you for conducting the conference committee extremely well and taking input from members both publicly and privately and the public and proceeding at a quick pace, but also having watched the Senate committee work as well as the base serving on your committee, Mr. Chair. Just sincerely, I want to tell you that I think that without a doubt on both sides of the aisle, there's a lot of appreciation for the work that you guys do as chairs, and just want to thank you for your leadership.
Thank you, Representative Kaelin. Is there any further discussion to the motion before us?
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The